Therapy Thursday with Dr. Judy Blum. And, you know, a lot of stuff been going on in the news here with Roman Polanski and David Letterman and his thing, you know, sleeping with staff and all that kind of stuff.
Mackenzie Phillips, sleeping with your own daughter. Phillips,
you know, coming out on Oprah last week about her dad. And, I mean, wow, is it just rampant right now? Or is it, we're just finally hearing about this kind of stuff, Dr. Judy? You know, what is this all about?
Well, it's certainly always been around. You know, none of this is new in terms of people using sex for power, right? And people who are in powerful positions, men or women, it's just that there are more men in power, really tend to use their sexuality as a weapon. And that's really kind of what it is. It's a way of saying, I am more powerful than you are. It's not explicit. It's not said that way. But that's really the implied equation.
Women use their sexuality to empower them just as, I think, more than men would use sexuality. They use it in a different way.
That's right,
it's
in
power.
A different way. Women use their sexuality to entice and feel that kind of power. Look how desirable I am, right? I can manipulate somebody with my sexuality. With men, it's more of the conqueror kind of you know, warrior mentality, right? I'm such a he-man that I can, you know, have anybody I want, right? And have that instant gratification all the time.
But, you know, doesn't it take two to tango? We can point at all these men, which whatever they're doing is wrong. You shouldn't do this, do that in the workplace, or have this kind of power over whoever. But at the same time, I mean, despite taking out Mackenzie Phillips and a young child, but talking about David Letterman, she also could have stopped and said no.
Again, yes, you're right. She could have stopped and said no. However, you're looking at a power equation, and especially when there's a child involved, it takes on a whole new meaning. You know, now we're talking about pedophiles, really, who are taking advantage of the powerlessness of a child, because a child will feel like they don't really have a say. They don't really have the capacity to fully resist this much bigger, much more, you know, powerful person who is demanding sexual favors from them. And then if you also bring in the element of incest, like with Mackenzie Phillips, where there's a whole different level of connection and desire to please. You know, the child wants to please the parent. And when sex becomes part of pleasing the parent, it really gets you all screwed up, right? You know, all of a sudden, that's how I'm going to be loved. That's how, this person says they love me, and this is how they're proving their love to me, and I guess this is how I have to prove my love to them, to keep them happy and make them happy. I mean, so there's all kinds of stuff that goes into that equation.
It's true, because then you think of David Letterman, a powerful celebrity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, one of the big stars of late night.
And you're working on a show, that might be your dream job.
He could easily fire you if he wants.
Right.
Exactly. Or conversely, has the power to help you get to a much higher level.
Right.
To get promoted and, you know, make great contacts and all that other stuff, too. So power is a really huge piece of what we're looking at in all of those kinds of situations.
So what's wrong with these guys, and how do you deal with them?
Boundaries.
Yeah.
sort of the first issue here.
Wear turtlenecks and sweatpants.
Doesn't necessarily stop somebody. how do you stop them? First of all, you realize that it's not okay for them to do that, right? That really using sex as a weapon, which is what it becomes in those kinds of situations, is, bottom line, not okay. It's why there are sexual harassment laws. It's why, you know, those things are not allowed in the workplace. I mean, and that's really, you know, what you have to focus on. If you have an HR department, you go to HR. If not, you can either file a complaint with the police or, you know, get a restraining order, at least tell the person when they come on to you that you're going to do that, right? You know, you say, don't go there, you know. That's simply not going to happen. Love you, not going to happen. It's taking that kind of a very definitive approach right from the get-go, and even from the slightest little come-on, because, you know, rarely, it's, you know, we're not talking about, Polanski is a rape case. That's very different from the Letterman case, or at least what we know about it. With Letterman, what we're hearing, and again, hearsay, is that, there were sexual relationships, there's no indication that it was against somebody's will, right? So those are two different things as well. And the Mackenzie Phillips case, again, we're talking about things like incest, which is a whole other element that's brought into the equation. One of the unifying factors in all this is what we call sexual addiction. And sexual addiction, people like sex. It's not about, you know, whether you like sex or not or like having sex. That's not sexual addiction. Sexual addiction is about risking your life or your livelihood or your family because of acting out sexually. That's sexual addiction, where you're putting yourself or others at risk by your sexual behavior. And that includes a whole lot of things, including the person who, you know, is constantly picking up new people, random people, maybe going on the internet and finding people to have sex with. You hear about people picking up people in bathrooms or in bathhouses, those kinds of situations, and doing it repeatedly. Having really risky kinds of sex with a number of different people, all of those things are part of sexual addiction, and that's more about, and that's where it's similar to the ones we're talking about because people are putting themselves, like a man like Letterman is putting himself at risk by having sex with somebody who works for him, right?
Right.
Himself at risk. So that's the element of the sexual addiction that comes into play there. But sexual addiction can happen with anyone, man or woman, who is willing to put their own lives or the lives and welfare of others at risk because of sexuality.
Wendy.
Hi.
Wendy.
I have something to say about the Letterman conversation.
Yeah.
I think to classify him as maybe an aggressor or as a sexual addict for having an affair would be inaccurate. I think it's two consenting adults. There doesn't seem to be any quid pro quo. There doesn't seem to be any promise of anything.
At least not on the surface there isn't, Wendy, but, maybe there is. Maybe she's an aspiring writer. Maybe she wants to work on Saturday Night Live or, write for movies, and she thinks maybe this is her ticket to get there.
Yeah, that's
that
why
may
I'm
be her thought, but,
at this point in time, we're trying
to chastise him when there's no indication of that. And at the same time, workplace affairs happen all the time, to where CBS even has a policy that says if you're working together, whether you're above each other or not, you can consent to that and it's fine. And it doesn't appear, it seems like a boyfriend was dumped and he's trying to get back at other people and get money from it, not her.
I think companies are adding clauses now to that because they don't want to be responsible.
Yeah.
Exactly. I agree. But, they didn't have, it wasn't for power. They hung out. They went on romantic walks. Did different things. Her journal allegedly says that they were in an in-depth affair, so I don't see the attack that's going on him. Yes, it was wrong. I'm not condoning it, but to classify him as maybe an addict or doing it maliciously isn't fair to him, I think.
But he definitely used his power and exercised it in a way that would benefit him, it seems like. He had the upper hand for sure.
I don't know. We don't know that. We're assuming that just because he was in a higher role. There's no indication of that.
Right.
Yet.
What we do know is that he was that all of this happened while he was still actively seeing the woman who is now his wife.
Right.
And even there, you're looking at that element of sexual addiction where he's risking the relationship that is his long-term, supposedly committed relationship because of sex, and that's the piece. And it wasn't just this one girl apparently that he had sex with. It was, according to the complaint and according to what Letterman said on the air, it was some women. Okay, we don't know how many women. So, that's the element where it gets into the sexual addiction component of. Even if this in this one particular case, perhaps there, might have been more of a relationship than that, doesn't mean that there wasn't the sexual addiction.
Yeah, just because he messes around with people doesn't make him an addict. Maybe he feels, if you want to get into clinical sense, sense is maybe he feels neglected or there's other issues that are being presented to him in his life. It doesn't seem to be a power thing, and it doesn't seem to be an addiction thing. He's not talking about anything to the point of nymphomania. I mean, it's not. It wasn't just about sex. It was about relationships and companionship.
Again, we don't know if that was true in all the cases.
Thanks, Wendy, for your call.
There isn't enough information out there. Know that, or how many cases there are, we don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and you know what? I don't feel sorry for David Letterman because, I mean, he's almost been on TV, what, 30 years? He's got a lot of money. I think he's pretty comfortable in his life. So I don't feel like, you know, if he's been neglected, I have a tendency to say, oh, well, too bad.
Also, and he certainly knew that he was in a powerful position and that, you know, a large part of his attraction is because he is in a powerful position.
Of course. I mean, look at him.
Right, exactly. It's true. You know, I mean, so you know, you do have that power equation.
I think he's a little
bit... Even if it's not explicitly stated or, you know, it's still there. It's still part of what the dynamic is between anybody who's in charge of anybody else, right?
Yeah. Isn't he a little bit of a commitment phobe? How long was he with Miss Lansky?
Since the 80s or something?
Yeah,
really?
Since like 80-something.
Yeah, they've been together like over 20 years, 25 years, I don't know.
They now got married. Talk about power. I think any woman should have left a long time ago.
Yeah.
I mean, what is that about? What, are you going to commit to me or what are we doing? Because I feel like we're in limbo. But because he's powerful and he's David Letterman, she stuck around for 50 years.
So have you experienced, you know, a guy like this in your workplace over the years, maybe a boss? Maybe you've seen it happen in your workplace.
Your superior.
You know, we'd love to hear your story about it. And you can remain totally anonymous if you want.
Or how to get out of a situation.
Yeah, and figure out how do we get out of that. Because it's difficult. You know, you got a boss. You can't tell your boss what to do. And
times are hard when it comes to looking for jobs. Not like you can just, you know, split from your job and find another one easily.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, you feel like I better just keep my mouth shut because I need this job right now. Good morning. You have a question for Dr. Judy?
I do have a question. I was wondering how sexual addiction is treated and if it can be cured or if you just manage it.
Treating sexual addiction, it's not about curing. It's more about treating. Like any addiction, it means working a good 12-step program as a really essential component of that, because people have to become aware of why they use sex the way they do. For a lot of people that I've worked with, you know, the sexual acting out in a way is a way to numb themselves from their feelings. They can get that instant high, right, the instant gratification of the sex, and it just blocks out all their other feelings, so they don't have to go there. And afterwards, they tend to feel a great deal of remorse and shame, but it doesn't stop them from acting out again. So people have to really get into either Sex Addicts Anonymous or Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous, and there's a little bit of a difference between the two. One is more based in the sensation of the sex and the numbing. The other is a little more based in the craving and need for attachment and instant connection, you know, wanting to feel connected to another human being and you know, racing into, I'm in love, I'm in love, I'm in love constantly, you know, telling themselves that, you know, this isn't just sex, it's love, but, you know, it's, you know, 20 people, right? So it's those kinds of groups can be really helpful and really help people understand that they have support and that they don't have to go there in order to be able to handle their feelings. So that's a huge piece of what you're really looking at there.
So it's like any other addiction, drugs, alcohol, they could fall off the wagon at any time.
Yeah, people fall off the wagon a lot with drugs and alcohol, absolutely true, and they fall off the wagon a lot with sexual addiction as well. I mean, it's, you know, addiction is addiction, or food addictions, right, you know?
Uh-huh. How?
Addiction is addiction. You got to treat it in essentially the same way. You got to look at why the person is using whatever they're using, in this case, sex to numb themselves, right, or sex as power, or, you know, sex as something outside of feeling a real committed and you know, powerful desire to be connected to this one person. you know, and you know, I do want to differentiate between somebody who's, you know, in their early stages or earlier stages of sexual development and identity, who might, you know, experiment a lot in the process of finding out kind of who they are and what works for them and what's, you know, what that's really all about and, you know, all that kind of stuff. That's not necessarily a sexual addiction. You know, we're really talking about people who are, you know, already a little bit more advanced in their lives, out of their, you know, say early 20s, you know, who are still at the point where they're acting out a lot sexually. People can also be, you know, use pornography as part of a sexual addiction, where they, you know, they watch endless amounts. And again, I'm not talking about small amounts. Everything is you know, relative, right?
Okay.
But somebody uses pornography to constantly get off, and to the point where, you know, they really can't have a relationship, a satisfying relationship with a real person.
Oh, geez, that sounds awful. Thanks for your call.
You're welcome.
How about, you know, some of these men using sexual addiction as their excuse and taking instead of taking responsibility for the fact that, no, you just cheated on your wife? Because
yeah,
I hear that a lot in celebrity world, like, I'm a sex addict, I'm a sex addict.
Right.
And it's like, no, you cheated on your wife, and now you should take responsibility for your actions.
Yeah, and I think that again, you know, we're talking about numbers, kind of a numbers game here, right? You know, if somebody cheats on their, you know, spouse, man or woman, right, cheats on their spouse in a committed relationship where they're having an outside relationship, when the understanding and the agreement was that we are not doing that, that we are sexually exclusive, okay? If you're breaking that agreement, then, you know, you are not being honest and you're not being committed to the person you're claiming to be committed to. So that's different from a sexual addiction, where you're using the sex as a means of self-gratification to numb feelings. It's not, you know, sexual addiction isn't about love. Sexual addiction is about really about numbing internal pain, but it is about internal feelings, either of worthlessness or, you know, needing to be elevated in the sense of feeling more powerful, or, you know, wanting to numb other feelings, you know, regarding attachment, where attachment is too risky. That's where you get into sexual addiction, and that's where you get into multiple partners.
Hmm.
Wow. So what do you think David Letterman should do? Do you think that he should be fired from his job? Do you think that he should leave? That's now the big discussion.
You know, that's a question for CBS to figure out,
yeah,
not me.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I doubt that's going to happen to Letterman, you know.
Again, but, power.
Yeah. Yes, I mean, know, if it were... Right. If it were,
I mean, you're probably not looking at that. Will he get his wrist slapped in some manner, shape, or form? Maybe. You know, who knows? Who knows what it's going to... How it'll proceed in a court of law.
Not.
I don't think anybody has enough information at this point to even predict that.
Some women are thinking, oh, wow, these other girls got away with it. I think I'm going to go ahead and try.
Yeah, right?
Hey, that's just serious. That's just real things that I've seen in an office.
Yeah.
Other women have gotten their way with the powerful man, so can I.
Right.
Yeah,
they feel like it's
happens.
An open door
and again,
for them.
You know, we're talking about men, but it does happen the other way around. I mean, there are powerful women who will exploit, you know, guys who work for them. So it's,
oh, sure.
You know, I don't want to make the guys always appear like, you know, like the bad ones here. They're not. You know, women do it too.
Right. All right. Well, we're running out of time for Therapy Thursday this week. Dr. Judy Blume, your website is?
DrJudyBlume.com, and it's J-U-D-I-B-L-O-O-M.